Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you listen in. Previously on The Rundown with Justin Kent.
And I'm always blown away by people that come out and just crush their first marathon. But, you know, everyone's different. And Ben, my training partner, ran 2:10 in his first marathon. And everyone's different. Everyone has a different path. And I think that's what makes running so fun, is that like every race, every run is different. And it's how you respond to those different obstacles that help you develop as an individual. So
on this episode of The Rundown, we discuss fueling with ultra trail runner David Jecker. David's first love was cycling, embarking on long multi-day tours to travel and explore Europe. He still uses the bike to commute, but now it's more of a way to get to exciting run destinations. He's an exceptional endurance athlete, but what makes David even more interesting is his keen understanding for fueling and how it affects performance. It's a topic I've been very curious about lately, and I can't wait to share his knowledge with you all. This episode of The Rundown is brought to you by Exact Nutrition. I was looking for a tasty, vegan-friendly alternative to traditional gels, and Exact Energy Bars passed the test. Now available in Canada and the US, you'll definitely want to try them on your next long run. And they're offering you 15% off your order when you use the promo code LARUNDOWN. So go to exactnutrition.com and fuel your goals today. In this week's news, US marathoner and former LARUNDOWN guest CJ Albertson recently reclaimed the 50K world record title, running it in a time of 2 hours, 38 minutes, and 44 seconds at the annual Ruth Anderson Memorial Run in San Francisco. When I last spoke to CJ, I was so impressed with his unique training regimen and how he approached the sport. Since then, he's ran the Boston Marathon in impressive fashion, coming out and leading the pack early in the race and setting a personal best in the distance earlier this year. It's no surprise he's come back for the 50K and crushed his previous time. I strongly recommend giving CJ a follow on Strava, but beware of the insane training sessions he tackles regularly. Make sure to check the show notes for links to this story, special offerings, as well as the ongoing protests. There will also be a list of funds and foundations that need your support, so please consider donating to help support this movement. That's all for now. Gotta run. I think anytime you finish a race, you always have questions about performance, whether it goes well or goes poorly. My questions around my last marathon are specifically around nutrition and fatigue. And hopefully my next guest can help out with that and shed some light on that. He's a great runner in himself, and he's also studied endurance sports and the science behind it, behind hydration specifically. So he actually just raced Bromo 55K and hopefully has the energy to have this conversation today with us. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome to the show David Jecker.
Hi, Justin. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, how are the legs this morning?
Honestly, they're still quite sore, so I'm sitting down for that. I'm sitting down.
Perfect. Yeah, I had a different kind of endurance challenge. I drove home from, I had a 5-hour drive to get home, so not quite the same as your bike ride, but.
Yeah, I think I'd rather spend 5 hours on the bike than 5 hours.
Right. Yeah, and hopefully it helps your recovery. How did the Bromo 55K treat you?
Actually, that was a really, really great race. I think it might be my best ever trail race. I like to look at the performance index from the federations, but I think it's maybe I would call it a trail PB. So that was really good. I would say almost perfect race for me.
And so what would you qualify as a perfect race or a best race? Not just in terms of time, but how would you break it down?
Yeah, I think it's when you finish and you basically know that if you do it again, like five times over, you wouldn't go like a minute faster. So I think it's I wouldn't say like it's, I think for an ultra, it's harder to say like it's absolutely perfect because you never really know if you go like a minute faster on the first half, you really lose a minute on the second half. But I would say as trail race goes, that's probably as close as I could have done of a perfect race. So I'm quite happy about it.
Amazing. And so what was the, can you break it down for us a little bit in terms of, was it, you know, like I reflect on that quite a bit, you know, when a race goes really well and people talk about like the perfect day, you know, where hydration goes well, where your body feels great, where you're pushing yourself, but not cramping or your body doesn't break down. Can you break it down a little bit?
Yeah, I think especially like recently, I start to use a lot more heart rate to pace myself. So basically, it's just to be like just below like the maximum you've told yourself you can go at and basically maintain this intensity throughout. And I think in this case, I think the energy was good from start to finish. I didn't really add any low. I think mentally, maybe just after halfway, when you start to think like, because early on, I was feeling so great. You think, oh, I'm going to smash the course record. I'm going to run that time. And then you really start to think about that. And then halfway, you're like, whoa, that's might be a bit harder than I thought. So I think about 30K in, I was like, okay, that's going to be rough. And I think I overcome that, let's say, mental rough patch quite quickly. Because I wasn't feeling more tired or anything. Just like the muscle were, I would say, not near cramping, but I knew like at that pace, I could start to have some issue with muscle cramp at the end. And actually, it holds up pretty good. And I was able to pick up the pace a bit in the last 2K. So I was quite great to feel strong at the end of the race. So really like energy wise, I mean, and this, I know you want to talk about nutrition, but I think I was able to eat really, really well throughout the race. I think hydration wasn't really an issue because it was really cold. So it wasn't really like a big deal, but like food wise, I think I ate just over 100 grams of carbs per hour the whole day. So that was good.
Okay, yeah. So it was going down pretty smooth. And like with trail running too, it's hard to gauge because you're, you know, sometimes you're going uphill, downhill in terms of pacing. So you really got to listen to your heart rate and also pay attention to the fueling. So that's interesting because I'm thinking about hydration or fueling quite a bit more, like I said in the intro, but you said that you ate enough. So, and also you had also listened to your body and identified that perhaps cramping could be an issue. That was also my issue in a marathon that I just ran, where my hamstrings both kind of seized at different times. Well, at three different moments, every time during like a stronger effort or when I tried to increase the pace. And I felt like maybe hydration wise, like liquid hydration, or calories, I should say, weren't as available as I would have liked, but I was also taking my gels at the proper interval. So I thought, so can you touch on that a little bit in terms of like, is that enough? Like is food enough to prevent like, let's say a cramp in your experience or, because of the colder temperatures?
I think it's a good start. I think people always go with like, oh, it was dehydration. But I think we have to see that from the side, like muscle cramps it's an issue of like it's muscle fatigue, like neuromuscular fatigue. And then of course, if you are dehydrated, it may like increase the fatigue. If you don't eat enough, it may increase the fatigue. So it's always about, it's a mix of things. It's not just like, oh, it's electrolyte or it's food or it's pacing. It's all of this together. So I think if you are well prepared for the pace you're running and you're eating, I would say for anything longer than 2-2.5 hours, basically you almost have to eat as much as you can tolerate. Well, I mean, it's hard to say, not maybe tolerate, but as much as you can eat without having issues. And you have to train for that because I don't know how much you were trying to eat on the marathon. But for me, I know even for a road marathon, I will go for the same like 100 grams per hour, which is basically for me one portion every 15 minutes. mostly like the exact nutrition, like fruit paste, but it can also be a gel with like Morton or something like that. So basically 25 gram every 15 minutes. And when it's an ultra, sometimes I will increase that on the later part of the race. When I feel like I can eat more and that I might need more, I do that. So for me, that's the main thing. But I think you always have to think about that, like that's muscle fatigue. And then when you train, it's not about getting used to fatigue, but trying to make to resist to fatigue. And I think that's when like muscle, like strength training and all these comes into play, where for me, I know it's a game changer. When I do like some serious heavy lifts in the gym, that's when I don't have issue with cramping. So that's the way I see it.
Yeah, I would say that for sure, all that, you got to look at it in a more like holistic kind of way. You know, it's not just one thing that's going to help or prevent these things from happening, you know.
But especially like in your case, if it's the hamstring hamstring, you said, that were cramping, or
yeah.
So I think you have to say, like, if it wasn't dehydration, you would cramp from all the muscle you're using, right? So yeah. In this case, if it's only the hamstring, you have to think, okay, what can I do to improve like the resistance to fatigue from your hamstring? It can be like doing more high intensity interval. It could be doing some like uphill sprint on like a gradient that's not too steep, so you can still have some speed in there. And it can be like really specific strength training. So I think you also have to think about like what are the muscles that are the limiting factor in the race.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, because I thought gel wise, I was spot. Like, you know, I was, for me anyways, doing well. Like I was like, oh, I'll take a gel every 45 minutes, you know, and I was trying to go for my best time in a marathon. And my previous time was 2:45. I was feeling great, and then suddenly things didn't feel so great, you know. but when you said when you started to identify that maybe the cramp could become a problem later on, when is it too late for, like, we're on cramps, but when is it when is it something that you can prevent from getting worse? Like, at what point can you kind of intervene, or can you have that gel at that moment? And I mean, it might be hard to say, but you know, where you're going to be able to kind of fend it off, so it's not going to become a problem.
Well, I think the most important thing is maybe what you do before the race, so you get like ready on the start. But once you can feel, I think it's also to identify like what's the cause from it. Like in my case, I know it was probably the fact that we ran a really long section on that's mostly flat. So I think you're getting tired from, it was also the hamstring. So, you know, like, oh, it's going to be like a bit rough, but then you start to go uphill again. And it was, I guess, easier on the hamstring, and then it just goes away. So, I think my best marathon also, like halfway, I was also feeling I was near cramping. I still finished in the personal best time. So I think sometimes it's just to be aware, like, okay, that's going to be the limiting factor. So I think it's a lot of about pacing, like to try to keep it the intensity as even as you can. Because if you're like trying to pick up the pace like drastically, that's when it will certainly like start to cramp for real if you feel like you're close to it.
What do you think? Yeah, like staying in a constant state is better than you know, increasing your speed.
Yeah, and also I think like we know stretching is the one thing. Like once you cramp, stretching make it goes away for at least like a few minutes. So sometimes I also think I think it's easier in trail running, but to change my stride a bit. So try to lengthen it sometimes so that you have some kind of a stretch at the end. But on the road, it may be harder to do that because you're basically already close to the limit. So it's hard to just run differently. But I think that's also something you can think of. And then there's some tricks like, I think like pickle juice and I think mustard or stuff that are really, really like, I would say taste bad basically. And this is actually a direct effect on the neurologic system. Like you just eat something that tastes bad and your body can, I would say, you prevent the cramp for the few minutes again. It's like stretching. It's just, it's temporary, but it can still help a bit.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe that's a trick that you'd more see in an ultra, you know?
Yeah.
And it really depends who you talk to. Cause I actually quite like pickle juice.
Yeah.
So it's, it, you know, doesn't taste too bad. And if it helps, why not, you know?
Yeah, because I think sometimes people think it's because of the electrolyte or something that's in there, but it's more the taste, like the fact that it's not that it tastes bad, but it's like some kind of a shock to your neurological system, and it's supposed to help a bit. But I think the best is really, like, for me, it's like pacing and just to keep the a good nutrition and hydration. But like when I say good hydration, that doesn't mean like you have to force yourself to drink. Like most people are quite good at drinking to thirst, and for most people, it's the best way to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I felt like I was picking up. I always pick up water every time, you know.
Yeah.
but you know, you eat every 15 minutes. That seems like a lot, you know. It seems like way more than most people, I'd say.
Yeah, but I think some people think it's a lot because let's say you're eating one gel every 45 minutes, but do you also drink some calories on the side or beside
that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that was for Berlin. You know, I drank water most of the time, but mainly because I feel like I couldn't identify where the hydration or where the electrolyte drink was on course because of signage, et cetera. Maybe that's, you know, part of planning, right? Like, where are these aid stations? When can I get that specific drink? But I felt like I only picked up one cup of electrolyte and then the rest of the time it was water. So I thought that maybe that might have, you know, typically I'm grabbing Gatorade on course, but on this course in particular, they didn't have that option. It was, you know, the Morton drink that they had. So yeah, just in my analysis of, you know, of all that, you know, what could I have done better? Sorry, that was a tongue.
Yeah, twister. I would say eating more gels, because like one every 45 minutes, I think that's what's written in the package, but that's basically, I guess it's the recommendation for like exercise from, I don't know, like an hour to 2 hours. But once you do above 2 hours, like even Kipchoge on his almost 2 hour marathon, even the time he beat it like in this race that wasn't a real race, I think it was 100 gram per hour. So it's also the same as going one gel every 15 minutes. I think he drank it. It was probably Morton. But I think most people don't have enough. I think the recommendation, like the official recommendation, I think that dates back from 2005. I think it's 90 grams per hour when you run for more than 2.5 hours.
Okay.
I start to see a lot of people and even research pointing out that 120 grams is possible. So that's where I try to go to. Like in Bromo, it was a little bit over 100. And I think in my next race, I will try to go even more. Because basically, the thing is, you try to maintain an intensity that's as close as you can from your threshold. And to do that, you need to burn a lot of sugar. So if you don't eat any, I think that's a big issue. And I don't know what are your PVs, but oftentimes when you see someone with a personal best that's a lot faster on the half marathon or 10K than the marathon, I think oftentimes it's not a training problem. It's oftentimes it's the nutrition that's not not good enough on the marathon.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I think they're pretty relative. My times, like I'm 118 okay. half, 245 full. I don't know where my 10K is at. Maybe 36, something like that. Yeah. So yeah, that'd be, I think it's pretty, they're all pretty relative. There's no glaring. It's not like I'm running a, you know, 14 minute 5K and then, you know, 245 marathon, you know?
Yeah.
Certainly, you know, hydration is, or fueling is something that I could look at more, you know? And when you say grams, it's grams in calories, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, grams of carbs. So
carbs. Okay.
Yeah, so that would be like 400 calories per hour.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So yeah, it's basically seeing what fuel works for you, and then what's in that fuel, and so then you can say, okay, I need to take, you know, and maybe, you know, one gel, one endurance tap in my case, every 45 minutes maybe isn't enough. Maybe I have to go to one every 30, or, you know, based off of the chart on the back of a tap, you know?
Yeah, even one every 20, which could be okay. I mean, especially like endurance stuff, I guess it's maple syrup. So that's the glucose fructose ratio is quite good in that. So yeah, you should be able to absorb a lot. It's the same like Morton and Exact, like I would say the good product. Often it's quite like between 2-to-1 glucose to fructose ratio, 2-to-1 and 1-to-1. Basically, that's the sweet spot, I would say.
Yeah, the sweet spot. We're talking about sugar, so that's good. And Exact is also like a very, very good option too. You know, just that, you know, I like to mix between the two in terms of like, you know, one's a gel and one's a bar, you know, fruit bar too, but they're also providing different kind of nutritional value too. So do you like to mix up yours, or do you kind of tend to stick to the same thing? You know, I know sometimes, especially in our ultra, things can get quite you don't want to get bored of the same product, you know?
Yeah, but I think in ultra you can always have the aid station to get off the, I can eat like almost only Exact nutrition.
Yeah.
But then at the aid station, I will have some real food just to have something different. And sometimes I also have a few other gels, whether it's like Morton or something with maple syrup, but mostly like the Exact bar are quite good. And then, as I said, I think especially when you go, like, I would say for me, maybe over like 6 hours, sometimes I also like to have like a more of a solid bar on me. And then if I feel like hungry, because sometimes you can eat 100 grams of carbs per hour and you still, once it's dinner time or lunch time, you feel hungry again. So you're like, oh, I need to eat some real food now. And if you have a bar on you, you just go with that, and it's fine.
And so, you know, a lot of people would say, like, you know, when I'm running, I don't feel like eating, or, you know, it's this fine line. I think always nutrition's an afterthought. I really feel like that. I think people focus on, you know, it's always about the running, and then it's next comes the outfit and the shoes, and very little thought is put into what you're eating. So is that something you practice regularly, or is it when you just practice that on intense training, or how do you manage that?
Yeah, I think most of my long runs I will eat almost as much as in a race, just to practice it. But I think it's also interesting, like, that you can't really go by feel when it comes to food, I would say, in a race. Like, as I said earlier, like, thirst is quite simple mechanism. So you can drink to thirst and have enough water to be okay. But if you go, like, with food based on how hungry you are, well, you may have bunked in a race before, and you're never really, like, hungry before you bunk, right? You're just running, and at some point you're completely like, you can't go any faster, and you start to slow down, and you're not hungry. Like, so basically hunger is not a good signal for while you exercise. And well, some people could say it's also not a good sign even in the regular life. So I think hunger is so complex. It's really difficult to go by feel when it comes to eating. So I think you basically have to So in a way force food in. Like for me, I have an alarm on my watch when I run, and so this tells me when to eat something. And I think it's really, really important. Like people, as you said, like shoes, gear, like that's so important. And then it's also, I think, hydration and electrolytes, it's super important. But the reality is getting calories, and it's maybe the biggest difference, especially in ultras, but it's also true, I think, on the marathon.
Yeah, depending on like what the effort level is, you know, if it's just a Sunday easy long run, well, maybe it's a little less crucial. But then if you're trying to go all out on a marathon distance or something of that length, and giving a really, really strong effort, or maybe jumping into a pace that you're not comfortable with. Yeah, like you got to feed the muscles. I definitely felt that, you know, I don't regret what trying, you know, to go for it. But really I was like, you know, my body, you know, I thought I was well trained and everything, but the body got tired. The muscles got tired before the brain wanted to quit, you know? So I was like, man, how could I have managed that a little bit better, so I could have, you know, so it could have maybe lasted a bit longer, you know. And that's the fun part about the marathon. It's or anything longer than that, I'd say it's a distance that where you know, if you're not careful, you can get in trouble quite quickly, you know. And it was a good example of that for me.
Yeah, I think you have to practice it. Like, as I said, even if you're going a long run easy, you don't need the carbs. But I think, like, at least once in a while, you need to practice it just to see, like, because it's a big difference. Like, gut training is something. Like, you will be able to absorb more carbs if you've practiced it in training. So I think I would say for me, like, at least one long run out of two, I would go with the same fueling strategy as a race. So that I really know that I'm able to eat a lot, and that makes a big difference.
Yeah. So I'm definitely gonna bring a few fruit bars and gels with me in my next long run.
Yeah, sure. And I think one thing we often don't realize is sometimes more is even better in terms of avoiding GI distress. Because if you eat really little, like one every 45 minutes is maybe a minimum, but let's say you eat one gel every hour, it may not even be enough to keep your digestive system active. So then you start to have, you don't want to eat more because basically there's no blood going to your digestive system anymore. So sometimes people, when I say to them, I eat 4 gels an hour, they're like, how can you do that? I can't even have two. But the reality is two is easier than one, and maybe three is even easier than two in terms of avoiding issues. And then, of course, if you want to go to 4 or 5 gels an hour, then you need to practice it. It's like a U curve. There's a spot where it's easier. And I think 1 gel per hour is definitely like not enough to actually even avoid issues of digestive issues.
So it's like the bare minimum, you'd say.
Yeah, I think that some people say, I remember a Congress, there was an expert in Australia, and he said like, he's saying that the minimum would be like 50 to 60 gram per hour for most people. So if you go below 50 to 60 gram, especially if the weather is warmer, so when it's warm, there's also like blood going to the skin to cool you down, then it's really hard for your body's not going to send blood to the digestive system if there's nothing there to digest. So if you keep like eating at a regular pace, like even for me, like when the ultra starts, like the first 15, after 15 minutes, I'm already on the first gel. So it's, you really need to start really, really early. So you keep the blood flow going to the stomach and the digestive system.
Yeah. It's continuing to work, right? It's not, it's not like waiting for its next meal. It like knows it's coming, and it's always, it's working throughout the whole time. So you're kind of getting your body's used to it. It doesn't have time to, you know, people say my stomach shut down, or I mean, I've faced that in like in the Ironman before on the run course where the heat sets in. Maybe I haven't eaten enough. I abandoned my fueling strategy because I wasn't doing it maybe frequently enough, and then I have no desire to put anything in my stomach. You know.
And this is, I think this is the biggest sign that you need to, like, basically if you can't eat anything, that's because you need to, but it's often going south from there. I think that's always tough.
Yeah. That led me to a long, maybe more than half marathon of, you know, walk, running, you know, survival mode to get to the finish, you know, and what was a starting to be, you know, was going to be a good race, but you know, it still was, but just had to you know, manage it better in the later part. So what's been the greatest lesson that you've learned from learning about nutrition, would you say? Like, have you had to learn some hard lessons too to get to this point?
I think I'm quite curious, so I tried a lot of stuff, even going keto for a few weeks and trying to go like doing long run only on fat and stuff. And I think what I learned is for me, like carbs is really like the biggest thing. Even running fasted, if I do fasted running, like I can easily jog in the morning without having breakfast. But I know like in the long run, I will just be more tired for the during my training week, and it will have an impact on my performance. So I know for me, I need not only to eat a lot during, but also I need to have carbs before and after. And not try to count calories or anything, just eat as much as I want. And even I would say sometimes when I train more, basically force myself to eat more. So we talked about hunger earlier, but I feel like when you do a lot, at some point, you're not going to be hungry enough to eat. So basically you have almost to force yourself to eat a bit more carbs so that you know, like, I'm going to be recovered for the next training. So that's a bit tricky in a sport where people try to be like super lean and they think like they can't eat stuff or whatever. But the reality is you need a lot of food if you want to train and if you want to adapt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And if you want to recover too, right? You need the fuel for all that. So that's important lessons for sure. And I don't think, like I said, I think it's something I don't take as seriously as I should. Like, it's something that I'm becoming more curious about for sure. And but it needs to be taken seriously, especially if you want to perform at a higher level or get to the next level, or, you know, and if I look at yourself, like you've performed incredibly in multiple, distances and events on bikes and running and so there's no like limit to that. And, you know, like you were saying about Kipchoge, like some of the best in the world are really zoned into their nutrition specifically so they can sustain this effort over time, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah. I think one physiologist once said, I think it's the priority of the body is not to recover and to adapt. So if you don't eat enough, like, you're not going to adapt to the training. So I think that's something you can see from athletes. Sometimes they do like a big 3-week training block, and in the end, I think sometimes they're not really progressing because they're just doing it on, I don't know, on basically not enough food. And then once they get to the taper before the race, that's when they are like super hungry and they can eat all day, because finally the level of training is low enough that they're back to their like regular metabolism and regular self. So I think it's really more important than anything. And I think we often hear people talk about like the low energy availability and eating disorder and all that, but the reality is that we don't realize is that you can under eat without really knowing you do, like without having an issue, like just because it's regular habit. Sometimes you just, oh, I don't like to bring a second meal when I go to work, so I only bring one, and then I'm going back home super hungry in the evening. But I think those habits make that you don't really improve in the long run.
So how do you identify, you know, how do you know if you're eating enough? Is there a way to tell, or?
But I think there's a few signs that we don't really sometimes don't listen to. Like, even like people use, sometimes they're always cold. Like, if you're always cold, maybe you should eat a bit more food. Or if you don't recover well from your training, like if you should, or even I think the simplest is, do you want to go for a run? Like, you have a run plan today, you need to go jog like 50 minutes, even if it's easy. And if you don't feel like going for the run, it may be as stupid as you've not eaten enough to go and train. So I think that's really like some simple cues that, oh, maybe I should try to eat more and then see what happens. Because I think people are sometimes worried they're going to gain weight, but the reality is there's maybe like a 500 calories where your body will adapt and just adjust the basic metabolism. So basically you can eat 500 calories more and you won't gain any weight, but you just will have like more energy to train, more energy to work, more energy for everything, for life. So I think that's one thing we don't always realize, that you can be in a deficit without really trying to, and you will say, oh, but my weight is I'm not losing weight, so I shouldn't be. But the reality is your body just I would say preserve energy. So that's one thing we should maybe be more aware of.
Okay, So that becomes another kind of issue altogether. But yeah. Do you feel like for some people it's a weight watching thing, you know, because it's between, you know, maybe physical appearance and what their body actually needs. You think that becomes a problem sometimes?
Yeah, I think, but this is, I think, more talked about, because I think people, if you really have an issue and you think like, oh, this food is bad for me, this food is bad, and you try to avoid certain food and you try to be leaner, and you try, I think then you really have an issue. But what I'm saying is that some people, even myself, like sometimes I can look back at my training and like, oh, why I was doing so poorly like that year. And then you remember, oh, maybe I was just not eating enough. Mm. I think we've heard like really fast run. I think Cam Levins who just smashed the Canadian marathon record. And he basically said, oh, I've just started eating like enough now. So that's basically the big difference for him. It's not like any crazy new shoes or any different training. It's just, oh, I started to eat more and now I'm faster. So I think it's quite simple. And I say that he wasn't maybe even aware that he was restricting himself. Sometimes it's just an habit like, oh, I'm not going to eat like 5 meals a day. It's crazy, but that's what I do now. And I'm having a good, really good year of racing so far. So. And my weight hasn't changed. I would say sometimes when you start to eat more, you may gain like a pound, but that's basically just because instead of always having your glycogen store super low, now it's always almost topped up, and this is why you can train more. So it's just a small difference, but it's a big one in terms of
maybe I mean we say we race on feel or train on feel sometimes, and maybe we got to eat on feel too. You know, eat when you're. I mean, it comes down to like eat when you're hungry, I think. And
Or even more, I think that's sometimes the advice nutritionists give that. And I'm no nutritionist, so maybe I shouldn't say that. But I think sometimes the advice we hear is for, I would say, the regular people who don't exercise much. So basically, eat only when you're hungry, not if you feel like eating. Just ask yourself if you're really hungry. And I think it's the opposite for runners. Like if you feel like you want food, even if it's not real hunger, maybe it's because you actually need to eat more. So I would say sometimes you can take the advice and just make the opposite. Like the idea of, oh, if you want to have smaller portion, you need to have like a smaller plate. Well, it's the opposite for runners. Have the biggest bowl you can have for your cereal in the morning. So you can have a big one. And you have enough carbs for the day. Well,
yeah, right. Yeah. Carb. I mean, I've never been one to count or look, but maybe it's something I'm going to have to pay more attention to, especially with the guideline that you gave at 90 grams. But it just also like general meals, that's also something to look at for sure. And I mean, I'm Italian, so, when I go to my parents, I always got a plate of pasta or pizza waiting for me, so. So that's always good. There, but I love to eat, so, and also if you're running all the time, like I know simply that I need, I need fuel to support that. And there's no shame in grabbing something when I'm hungry or whatever, but I think it's something very important to be aware of for sure. And I think that's whenever I hear like conferences about nutrition and stuff like that, sometimes the numbers clog my mind, but when we talk about it simply like this, it can be quite simple too,
Because I think like counting calories, like if you ever count calories, it's because you want to make sure you have enough, not because you want to lower them. And I'm not saying you have to, because it's so inaccurate. Basically everybody's different, and sometimes you can count calories. I mean I did that in the past, and I know that even if I go 500 calories above what would be the amount to maintain my weight, I'm not gaining weight. And that's how I feel the best. So I think there's a big, big, big difference between people just for the basal metabolism. So I think it's quite, I'm not saying you should count calories, but maybe sometimes it's useful when you go like in carb load, just to see like how much carbs do I really eat the 2 days before a marathon, because you're supposed to eat like 10 to 12 grams per kilo, which can sound like insanely high for most people, but I know for me I can do it. And when I do that, that's when I have a good race after, like a real carb load, when you're taking time to sometimes count calories or just make sure you eat as much as you can almost.
For sure. And can I say, like, Where do you store all this this food, especially when you're racing? Like if I look at if I look at your fueling, right? You said maybe you're eating, if I look at an exact bar, for example, you mentioned it, 25 grams of carbohydrates per bar. You're taking what, 4 per hour? So Where do you load all that in a distance that's like, you know, a marathon or 55K like you just did?
That's a good question. I have some pair of shorts from Adidas. I can have like 18 bars in them. I think I could have more, but I know 18, it doesn't budge. So it's quite stable. Okay. And yesterday, like Saturday in Bromont, I had my, I'm actually running with a fanny pack that's absolutely not made for running, but I think it's the best running waist belt ever. And I basically tuck a simple hydration bottle in the back, and in the front, I think I started the race with 16. Well, it was exact and a few Martin in there. And yeah, that's basically good for 4 hours. And then there were some exact at the aid station, so I could grab some more. So basically, okay, that's how I do. And even on the marathon, basically, I go with some my trail running shorts that I can put enough kills in them. I think that's the best way to go.
Okay. And naturally you should run faster as you go, because you're shedding these bars. So I guess it's motivation to eat as many as you can.
Yeah. But I think weight, when it's in your pocket, it doesn't really matter, I think, in terms of.
Yeah.
But I agree. I think that the ideal situation is to have everything you need on the course, but it's oftentimes there's like one or two gel stations on the whole marathon. So there's no way you can have enough. And drinking, I think some people just try to drink all the calories, but it's really hard because you don't know how much you're drinking when you go on a marathon, because it's a few cups here and there.
Yeah.
And for me, the best way is always to have all my, basically have all my food eating. So basically shells, bar and everything. And then I drink water sometimes with electrolytes, but basically try to have the food plan and the hydration plan completely independent of each other. So basically if I'm thirsty, I drink more water, and I basically eat every 15 minutes, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, so that's a good point, because it's hard to measure liquid when you're running.
Yeah, and that's an issue sometimes. Like you have a bad race and you're like, well, even me as a coach, like, okay, so how much carbs did you eat? And they can't really tell you. So it's like, well, we don't even know if it's too much or not enough. But too much, it's quite hard to get there. But I mean, it's really hard to have to give them some feedback. So I think the best way is always to have your own bars and kales on you. Of course, yeah, the elite, they have their own bottle. So that's maybe the easiest way to go, because then you can drink calories, but you still know how much you've drinking. But that's, yeah, for me, it's really the best ways to go with exact. And I think like in Ottawa this year for the marathon, I probably had all the bars I needed on me. So that's probably a lot, like 8 maybe.
Right.
Oh, even more, 10. Yeah, 10 bars in me. Yeah.
And it helps when they're on course too, right? It really, yep, helps when the nutrition that you're using is on course, because, you know, then you don't have to worry about necessarily carrying it on you or having not enough. You can always grab some on course. And yeah, they, okay, were exactly, they were definitely there present at the Ottawa Marathon this year. So that was fun to see too.
Mm-hmm.
David, I want to talk a bit about you, you know, like, of course, like nutrition and everything is a big part of what you're doing and in your studies, but kind of maybe go through like where you grew up and, you know, were you athletic as a kid? Where did the love for running come in for you?
Yeah, I think, well, I'm born in Switzerland, but I grew up in Quebec. I think I was 3 years old when we moved. And I think I started doing some, I would say, endurance sports in, maybe I was 10 or 12 years old when we were biking a lot. Just as kids, you just ride your bike everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I think I was maybe already like loving this more than most people. And I think I really, but I picked up like endurance sport quite late. I think it was when I was maybe 15 years old. I was maybe cycling more for training at that time. But then the really first time I think I started to run was 2009. I was already at university and I had an internship to do in Sweden. And then I was like, oh, I'm not going to bring my bike there because it's quite expensive to buy a bike.
Right.
So I'm going to start to run. And as I guess I was maybe naive, but I just registered for a marathon because I saw, oh, there's a marathon like close by where I'm doing my internship. So I'm going to run this marathon. So my first running race or endurance event was a marathon. And so that was how it started, basically. I was just going abroad and I didn't have my bike with me. So I training. And then after that, I just like naturally, I think I ran 3:20-something, like 3:30 around. And that was the first endurance event. And then I thought, oh, I like to bike and I like to run now. So maybe I'm going to do a triathlon. So that's when I started to do, I did 2 seasons of triathlon and I did an Ironman, but that was, I was really, really bad at swimming. And I didn't really like it anyway. So that's the start of it all. So I was already like 20, like above 20 years old when I started actually doing some endurance sport.
Okay, nice. Yeah, the swim, I mean, that's similar to how I got into triathlon too. You get a bike and then you're running and then you're like, oh, you know, might as well try to jump in some water and do the breaststroke or something like that.
But I think also before the marathon thing, cycling, I was at some point in Europe and I did like a 50-day tour on the bike, like, I would say not even bikepacking. I was basically sleeping in hostels and stuff. And I think that's when I realized, like, when people tell you, like, oh, you ride 200K today, like, that's a lot. And you're like, oh, really? Is that a lot? Like, it wasn't that hard. So I think that's when I realized, like, oh, maybe I actually am quite good at doing long stuff. So basically the really, really first, like, endurance thing wasn't even, like, trying to compete. It was just like, oh, I'm going to go around in Europe, around like the big cities, and just visit. So that's how it really started.
Yeah, do a Euro tour on bike. I mean, that sounds pretty special, you know. It's pretty good.
Yeah, that was fun.
But yeah, so like the interest for you was just touring, really.
Yeah, really. It wasn't like competition. As I said, like the first marathon was just like, oh, I need a reason to run, because as I played football in high school and also in CGF, and then I was like running when you're doing a team sport is almost like a punishment. Like it's we lose the game, we're going to run more on Monday. Like, running is not like something you want to do. And then so I thought I need motivation to run, so I registered for the marathon. But then you realize, like, actually I love training. I love to just go out and run. And then this is how it started. And after the triathlon thing, I think I start to learn about trail running. Like, oh, that sounds cool. And I read like Born to Run, and I was a big fan of Anton Kupicka. And then you start to think like, oh, that's the best thing ever. And you start to do that. And I think for the past, I would say almost 10 years now, that I'm running trail, and that's the best sport in the world.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, like there's a, now it's like, I think you probably still have that sense of discovery that you had when you did the bike touring, but also now also interested in pushing yourself a little bit and getting the best out of yourself performance wise too, which you see in almost every distance you do. You know, you're always going strong and clearly you fuel better than just about anybody, or as good as Kipchoge maybe.
And I think now it's also more, I think my pacing strategy now is quite good. I think in the past I was basically doing anything, and sometimes I think you have some pride thinking, oh, at least I tried. But the reality is, if you're trying to go above your limits, you're still going to fail. And I think that's what I learned like in the past 2 seasons, that there is a limit, and if you know what the limit is, then you can go as close as you can from it. But if you don't listen to, like, heart rate is, it's maybe, I think it became underrated once we start to have the wrist heart rate on the watch, because it was so inaccurate at the start that we stopped looking at it and thinking, oh, pace is everything, power is everything. But the reality is your heart rate is, I think, a good an indication of the real intensity you can maintain. And I think the best example for me is Ottawa this year. Like, I knew there's no way you can basically run above threshold heart rate for full marathon. But then you see that on the watch, like, there's no way I maintain that. And you just think, oh, don't watch it, just try. Well, I tried, and at 24K, and I start to cramp, and I almost jog the whole end of the marathon. So now I'm known. I mean, if, of course, you can think like, oh, at least I tried. Yes, but it was still dumb. It was still the bad decision you made. So now I'm really trying to trust myself. And I think that's the best way. Like, even in trail running, like Quebec Mega Trail this year, like 50K race, I'm 26th at the first aid station, and I finished third. So at some point, you know, like the guys in front of you, they're either faster or they're going too fast. And no matter what, the best thing to do for you is to just go your own pace, and you will either catch them because they started too fast, or they will beat you because they're stronger than you. So I think that's my mentality now, and I think it works quite well.
Yeah, you have to listen, and wherever your fitness level is, if you can make it to the end to the best of your ability, you're gonna rank wherever you rank, you know. But mm-hmm. Swinging above your weight class, I think. I mean, I can argue that Ottawa was the same for me in the half, where I was just like, let's just go on feel. Let's try and push as hard as, you know, as hard mm-hmm. as I think I can for the 21. And then, you know, at 16, you know, that's where, you know, things unraveled a little bit, you know. So,
yeah.
You know, it's more like, how long can I sustain this effort? Which is also an interesting experiment if you go in with that mindset. It can be, you know, a healthy way to look at it or to try, you know, but that's not mm-hmm. that's something you can also practice in training too, right? So I think like you say, it's that fine line, and you're using now heart rate as a way to measure that. So is there any like simple rules that people can follow for heart rate, or
well,
as a way to,
actually,
to practice?
When I say heart rate, I mean it's heart rate, but it's the heart rate that is based on a lactate test. So basically, I do a lactate threshold test, so I know like what heart rate is my first threshold and what heart rate is my second threshold. So then I know based on that. So basically, it's not just based on a like simple equation based on your age. It's basically like I know my maximal lactate steady state is 174 beats per minute. Like in terms of heart rate. So I know anytime I go above that, I'm basically going in over the red line, and this is not what you want to do. And right. it's true for basically, like on a half marathon, you can basically go exactly on that. And at the end, it will maybe drift a bit and you go over. But you know, for a marathon, you would like to go to stay just below that. And it's the same for trail running. Like in Bromont this weekend, I knew there's no way I can at any point go above 174 beats per minute. So you just try to stay under that. And this is how at the end you can still push and you can still go fast. So it's basically all based on the lactate test. And the...
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah. So yeah, that's a place to start is the lactate threshold. And then from there you have like at least a measurement for mm-hmm. your own fitness. So how long does that can that vary from year to year, or how quickly can that number change, or does it change all that much?
I would say that the interesting thing is the heart rate won't change as quick as the pace. So basically, if you do a test in the spring, likely your threshold pace will be a bit slower because you haven't all the training you will do in the summer and everything. But right. the heart rate threshold would be quite similar throughout the season or even two seasons. So for me, basically, I think the first test I did this year, I think it was 172 and the last one 174. But anyway, you're still in the ballpark of, okay, this is the threshold heart rate. So I think that's, you can also like estimate it from a run. But the issue is if you take, let's say the I think Strava or Training Peaks, it's always the 1 hour or 95% of 20 minutes. But if you really go like on a race, it will drift a bit. So like in my half marathon, maybe it's like based on my last half marathon, maybe Training Peaks thinks, oh, your threshold is now 177. But actually, if I try to maintain that, it's a bit too much. So I really like to have it based on my lactate test. But the idea is to have a reference point. And mm-hmm. so half marathon can be like, you just have to maybe take a few beats off that, and it's probably your when I say threshold, for me it's more the maximal lactate steady state. But then, again, it's a bit complicated maybe for this conversation. Like there's only one threshold, there's a few ones, so that's can get quite tricky.
Yeah, for sure. We'll try and keep it simple for this this chat so it's not overwhelming. Yeah. But yeah, even for me, like the simpler the better, you know, in terms of like mm-hmm. trying to understand this stuff a little bit better. So,
But I think sometimes it's just a matter of like basically if you ran a half marathon and your heart rate was 175 for the half, there's no way you can hold that for a marathon. Because we always look at the pace, but sometimes with different conditions, like different taper, different preparation, I think heart rate is sometimes quite useful, more than we think, I would say. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because a pace that even at a relaxed heartbeat, you know, the fitter you get, the quicker you'll run.
Yeah,
maybe on your easy stuff, you know. So
And I would say it's even more relevant to trail running, because I think trail running, it's the race is so long. Even the best, you will slow down at some point. But what you can try to do is to maintain the intensity. So if you try to maintain an heart rate, and then you train so that at this heart rate your speed doesn't decrease too much. So it's basically the opposite of this heart rate that's drifting. Like on a road race, it's short enough and you try to maintain the same pace, so you will have at some point maybe a drift in heart rate. I think in ultra it's the opposite. You just try to maintain the same heart rate and you try to reduce the drift in speed that is actually like you're slowing down. Mm-hmm. And if you do like strength training, if you eat enough and all that, that's when you get a race where your heart rate is almost the same throughout and the speed doesn't slow down too much from the start to the finish.
Right. It's like, you know, you're treating it. It's like we're talking about the body, like in terms of it being like it's a machine, you know,
exactly,
that it can be that performance can be measured if a little bit. There's predictors, right?
Exactly.
In performance and in what our bodies are capable of. I think that's what's super interesting here, that you're using numbers or some kind of, you know, analytics of the body to determine performance or to ensure that you're able to sustain efforts for longer periods of time. I think that's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think sometimes people, when you say that, they think, oh, it's too scientific. It's too serious to do that. But the reality is it's also a lot more fun when you know what's the right intensity. Like in Bromont, I really, really had a perfect race without any low. And I think that's the best way to have fun, because you don't go too fast and you don't blow yourself out in the first part, because it's quite exciting to be in the start line and it's so easy to go too fast in a trail race, especially mm-hmm. with the hills. I think on the road, like you see the splits and you know, like, oh, that is stupid. Like, you know, it's too fast. But on trails, I like to use the grade adjusted pace on my watch. So I have the equivalent pace if it was flat. So this helps me a lot. But still, if it's technical, it doesn't make sense anyway. So I think that the best metric in trail running is still heart rate. On the road, I guess pace is still really, really, really relevant. But then on the trail, I mean, heart rate is, for me now, it's everything.
Yeah, because you're going up, you're going down, you're running flat. It changes all the time. Yeah, great pacing makes sense because of inclines and declines. Obviously, that's going to affect your pace quite a bit, but... and so how do you measure the heart rate when you're in those races? Like is your watch a good enough, or do you need like a heart monitor on you, or what's the...
Yeah, I have the chest. I think it's more accurate than the wrist heart rate. But mm-hmm. even that, I think the latest watch, we start to be a lot better with the wrist heart rate.
Right.
And it works better for some people. But I think the issue with the wrist is sometimes, like, I don't trust the value as much. So sometimes you're not sure, like, oh, maybe it's, because if it's 20 beats off, you know it's off. But if it's only 2 beats off, you don't know. So I really try now to wear my heart rate monitor all the time.
Okay. So as an example, let's say let's talk about, you know, just training, you know, like what's easy? Is it like 50 lower than that that number, or like are you running, let's say, at 124 for your easy runs, or
when I do my test, you basically have the second threshold, which is the traditional like lactate threshold, FTP, or like around that, but you also have the first threshold, which is basically the moment where the lactate goes above your baseline. And this is basically, for me, the maximum heart rate you would like to maintain on the, well, you would like to go on the easy run. So for me right now, I think it's 153 or something. Okay. So I would never go above 153 on an easy run. And when I say that, it sounds like I'm trying to be at 150. Like, this is the upper limit. Mm-hmm. So I will mostly jog at 135, 140, like really, really easy. I think I'm really good at being lazy on the easy run. And I think that works quite well for me. But really, I'm just trying to avoid going above the first threshold on every easy run. And I basically do some interval where, like, once a week where I really, really go above, sometimes twice, but I don't
think that's cool. That's cool too, because it kind of follows the effort-based training too, right? All you're just all you're saying is, I want to avoid going too fast. I think always, even at the upper limit of the performance, it's like, I don't want to, I know if I go to 177 and I'm 174 that I will blow up, you know, but that you can run at that, if you stay at that threshold, chances are if you fuel properly and if you've trained well and all this stuff, that you're going to be able to, you know, have a day if all goes well, right?
Yeah. And I think sometimes people get, like, especially in ultra, you think like you need to train like at race pace or that you need to practice being fast. But like, as I said, when I jog, I never go above 150. But then in a race, I will be at like 160, 165 the whole time. Basically, you're in zone three. You don't want to train in that zone, but you race in that zone. And I think that's the beauty of polarized training. Like, you're doing a lot of slow running and a few intervals, and then you can race at a pace in between that for like 5 hours.
For sure. And what would you say is like a big misconception that people have when it comes to training for any distance?
Well, I think one thing that there's probably many, but one that comes to mind is the fact that like strength training, like oftentimes I think, especially on the road, like, oh, if you have like 30 minutes more in a week, instead of doing like strength training, you should add the 30 minute jog. But the reality is like that 30 minutes of strength training is enough, even once a week, to make a big difference, I think, in the performance in any distance. So I would say the fact that, oh, you need like more time to do strength, but like one session of like 30 minutes a week will make a big difference, I think, for most
people. Okay, good. Well, that's good for me, I think, because I have a hard time with the strength, you know. I'll do like maybe a couple times a week, but I only do like, you know, not that long, maybe like 10 minutes, you know, which.
Yeah, but sometimes also I would say runners tend to do like boring strength session. Like, you're trying to do core stuff, like it's really hard and it's not really fun. But I think if you really lift, like if you really go for like lifting weight, trying to work on the maximal strength with a lot of rest between series and really like a small amount of reps, that's a lot more fun. And I say that it can be in the gym ideally, but it can also be like at home with some elastic bands and some high steps and stuff. You can do stuff at home that's quite efficient also, and it's fun. You don't have to be like playing for minutes on end.
Do you have a recommendation, like a little routine that you can suggest?
Yeah, I think the best exercise, especially at home, that you can do is basically lunges, step ups. I like to do also some kind of leg curls with a Swiss ball.
Okay.
But that's just because my hamstring sometimes tends to be a bit weak. So that's something I do a lot. And side steps, like with an elastic band between your ankles. That's maybe one of the best to avoid injuries. Like, this is not maybe like for performance, but in terms of strengthening the hips a bit, especially as runners, like we always run a straight line, and then we get some IT band issue because we don't have enough strength in some part of the hips. But if you do like side steps with an elastic band, I think that's one of the go-to you need to do. And step ups, when I say step ups again, if you have high enough steps and you have some elastic bands, somehow like you can have some really, really high resistance on that, even if you are at home. In a gym, it's even better. If you have like an Olympic bar on your shoulders and a big step, you can really, really start to do some serious stuff.
For sure. Awesome. That's really good. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for those suggestions. I'll try some at home. Definitely something I know I need to improve. You know, oftentimes we know we need to improve on certain aspects, but sometimes it takes a while to get there, you know?
And it's tricky. I would say like especially like if you start to go in the gym and do something serious, I would say it can take like 10 to 12 weeks before you really see the benefits. Because right. I think at the start, it will maybe impair your ability to run in the days after. Yeah. It takes quite a while to actually like really start to see like, oh, now it works. But for me, it's basically, I think I restarted to go to the gym like just after Ottawa this year. Right. And I really start to feel it a few weeks ago. I was like, okay, now, like now I'm strong enough to, I like to say like I'm strong enough to train enough to be strong. So it's... It's actually a big gap you can jump when you do.
Yeah, that. They go hand in hand, right?
Yeah.
So what did you you mentioned the first marathon. Where was that one, and what did you love most about the marathon distance?
The first one was in the south of Sweden, like the Pustmaren Marathon, I think it was called. It was a really, really small event. So that was kind of interesting, but then I did, I think, Montreal and Rimouski and a few in Quebec, and I think what I love about any distance that's, because half marathon, you basically know your time. You have a good idea, like, if I take this year, like, let's say that the best possible outcome and the bad result is basically a minute in between, and you know you're going to be, like, right in between, normally. But on the marathon and in the ultra, I think the fun thing is that you don't know. Like, it's hard to predict. In the marathon, you can say it's easier. But on an ultra, I think that's the beauty of it. It's that there's no way you can have a clear idea of how long it will take. And in the marathon, I think it's the same thing. Because even, like, you can lose easily, like, 5-10 minutes if you go out. So I think that's the interesting thing, is the challenge of, you can't know for sure if it's possible when you start. Whereas the half marathon or 10K, you have a good idea of what you can do, I think, at least for me.
Yeah, all right. I can definitely agree with you there. Yeah, yeah. It was like between my last marathon and this one, it was like a 7-minute difference. So I was like, you know, like a 7 minutes slower, I should say, because I blew up basically. So.
Yeah, but you try probably to go like 2 minutes faster. So, I mean, it's always, and I think it's long enough that you can start to think about it. You have some doubts, like, oh, can I maintain that? I think on the half marathon, you basically, it's just, not that it's that easy. It's actually really hard, but it's just that you basically, even if you slow down, you won't lose that much time. But on the marathon, it's really like there's a risk. And once you blew up once, I think it's even worse because you know the feeling.
Oh yeah, that definitely 100%. But yeah, I'm still curious, you know, like it's this curiosity that I have, you know, of all things that you can always do better or improve on, you know, that when things don't go as you plan, that okay, well, without overanalyzing, of course, like I think, you know, training went super well and felt really good going into it, but you know, sometimes it's not the day, and that, you know, I can live with an effort, you know, with a good effort. And I think there's always a benefit in that, you know, it can always be chalked up to a really good training day, you know, kind of thing. But yeah, the marathon's always, you know, anything higher than that, I think it's just the longer you spend out there, the more time you have on your feet, the more things can go wrong, you know? So.
Yeah, exactly.
Even in an Ironman, like the difference between, you know, from 2 years, you know, I thought I was better trained year two, but you know, the race didn't go as well, or I didn't execute as well, and it was, you know, a 2-hour difference. So it's definitely interesting. The longer you go, you know, there's more possibilities for things to go well, or for things to get more challenging. So that's
also more possibility to learn. I think you learn a lot in these races when it goes bad, and then you can, and I think that's also one thing, like you need to be to change stuff sometimes. I think we tend to train always the same, and then you think, oh, I'll do a little more. But the reality is, just doing the same training but a little more, a little faster, it may not be a big difference. But if you are willing to add stuff in, like, oh, I'm going to start strength training, I'm going to start to do some intervals, that stuff that sometimes not everybody does, but you just try something. And when you try something, you also, I think, have the confidence that maybe it's going to work, like for a big difference. And that's what I think, but it's not a risk. Like, we're not like professional runners. Like, we're not going to lose a payday because we risked something in training and we try something different. And I think that's what people always train the same, I feel, especially even more, I think, on the road and also on the trail. I think trail running, people just do volume. They just run a lot. But the reality is there's other ways to do it. And I think there's stuff you can try to make yourself better.
For sure. I mean, do you think, I didn't know you were born in Switzerland. Have you been back? Do you think, is it a different maybe mentality that people have over there for training, or maybe a European way of training? Do you see any differences there?
Yeah, I went back for my my master in Lausanne in Switzerland, and I think in Europe it's really like, I think, regional. Like some country, like in France, it's a lot of like ultra is big, like long distance is really big. I think in Switzerland it's the opposite. It's like any short uphill race, like vertical kilometer, or even just some short climbs, that's a really, really big big sport. And like the level of competition is ridiculous. In Europe, in general, I think it's crazy. Like here, I would say it's easy to win a race, but kind of is. But in Europe, it's like you can finish like 10th on a local hill climb with just some people. You don't even know their names, but they're just like, fast. Yeah. What is that? Like, where are they from? So I think the level of competition is a lot higher in Europe in general, for trail running at least. But in terms of training, I think it's... like I know in triathlon there's a Norwegian way and there's a different, but the reality is I think it's more a matter of who the coach is and where you're from.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Guys, I've gotten to travel there twice in Switzerland in the last year. So, getting to see the elevation, getting to see those mountains, and I'm like, oh, people must be pretty strong out here if they're training on this stuff, you know, especially on the trail scene, you know. So but you've also got into coaching as well, I guess, right? Since 2016, I guess.
Yeah, I started actually when I was in Switzerland for my master. I did an internship somewhere. They were using Training Peaks to coach, and I was like, oh, I can do that like from anywhere in the world and coach people from anywhere. So I think that's when I started. Now that I have a full-time job, it's not a priority anymore. But at some point, it was basically almost my main outcome. And that was really fun. I think it's really great to help people to achieve their goals. But I think now that I'm not trying to push the coaching as much, I think what I really want to do more is these lactate testing I'm doing. But I think if you spend like 1 hour with me for the test, like the test doesn't last an hour, it's maybe maximum 30 minutes. But I just feel like I can give a lot of knowledge to the person and help them train better. And it's like it's just one time. And I can help so much more people doing that than coaching them. So I think that's what I really try to do now. It's more helping them like understand what are their limits and what is the physiology. And then if they come back like 3-4 months later, we can see like how they improve and what they're doing. So basically, instead of telling them what to do, I tell them what is the result of what they do. And then they can themselves or their coaches change their plan to get better.
Okay. So is this what you're doing for work now?
Well, I also do it a little bit for work, but basically on the side of on the weekend, sometimes I do some lactate testing at boutique and runs in Saint-Denis, so I can test a few athletes. Not every week.
So for people who don't know, like what's involved in that? Is it an expensive thing? You know, people are always interested in, you know, what can I do better? Yeah. How can I get the edge, you know?
Yeah, well, if you, we can start with the price. So
I'm giving you an opportunity here to.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's $150 tax included for one test.
Okay.
And basically the test is you run a treadmill every 3 minutes, the pace is increased, and every 3 minutes at the end of every step, I take a drop of blood from a finger and I measure lactate in that, and then I also have heart rate, and every 3 minutes the speed goes up. And you go as far as you can. So once you can't run anymore, test is over. And from that, so we have heart rate and lactate and speed, you can have training zones that are really based on your physiology. So that's what I do.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, and I've done that test a little while ago. I think maybe 5 years ago was the last one I did. yeah. when I was kind of getting into into triathlon a bit more, 2016 around. And I thought it was like it's a tough test. It's not a super easy one. And do you put the mask on the people too? And is that still
No, I don't do. Okay. I don't measure the oxygen consumption.
Okay.
It's quite expensive to have the equipment for that. And I don't think it really adds much. Like,
right.
I don't really care about what the VO2 max of someone is, because if it's really, really high and they're not running really fast, it's because they're not really efficient. So, well, great to know, but it's not, I wouldn't say it's interesting, but it's not useful. Whereas the lactate, I think, in the training zone, I think that's more useful. And it's also, I would say, cheaper to do a test with only lactate than to have VO2.
Right. Is there an optimal time for an athlete to do this test? Is it better at the beginning of the season or at the end of the season? Or what would you say?
I love to do it like close to a race. So then you can have a time that you can basically link to the test. But of course, the ideal thing would be to do one like early in the season, and then maybe one more when it's the competition season. But with some athletes, I think it's interesting to know like, okay, so this is the result from the test, and this is your half marathon time the week after the test. So, you know, like, okay, so like it makes sense, or like you ran exactly your maximal like that steady state pace for the whole half marathon. So you have a reference. But basically, I would say like most people, if you can do even just one a year, it's really great to see how you progress. So you can choose to do it like every time, let's say after your base period, if you do like something like that, or at the end of the season or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But and I think like some people are really, really serious, they will do like 3 a year.
Oh wow. Okay.
I don't think it's really necessary, but if you can but I mean I would love to do more of that, but I think if you can do like one a year, just especially I think people sometimes think, oh, it sounds for beginner, but it's actually the most relevant is for the beginners. Because once you run a lot, like, you know, like if you run a marathon at a certain pace, you know you're supposed to jog way slower than that and everything. But if you never raced, or if you race but you're not sure you've really hit your full potential, I think the best is to do a lactate test. Then you know like how slow is jogging pace. Because it's easy to tell people, oh, it has to be easy, you need to be able to talk and everything. But it's hard to develop that feeling for like what is an easy pace.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you start running, it's super easy to go too hard actually on easy pace, because you're naturally more, let's say, anaerobic, I think, when you start running. So it's really easy to go too fast. So I think it's more relevant for people who start running actually.
Yeah. That's always I remember when I first started running, or what I thought was like started to train for running, I would go out my door and run as fast as I could every single time. And I know now that was definitely a wrong way to train. So run slow, run easy. It's the secret. And it's not much of a secret. I mean, everyone says it, but I still think people do it way too quickly on easy stuff. So yeah, that's fun. I mean, I can hear just by listening to you talk that this is a, you know, big passion of yours. And when did you decide you wanted to also study it? You know, it seems like it's such a huge part of your life now.
Yeah, actually, I was doing, I did my bachelor in agricultural science, and I was doing an internship at some point in research, like basically watching cows and like I think it was animal behavior and something. And during that internship, I participated to a study as a runner. So basically, I was already running, and I just went to, I think we had to run 3 times a half marathon in the lab at like 30 degrees or something. And then I was like, oh, I can do research in something way more interesting than just like
cows.
I don't know, like cows, plants, or whatever. Like, oh, that this is really fun. And this is how I decided to, after I finished my degree, I did 1 year in kinesiology, and that was enough to start the master. So basically, I think I already had an interest for research and for science, but then I realized like, oh, and even sometimes think it's way different, but it's still biology, right? It's whether it's a runner or a cow, it's biology. It's almost, it's quite related when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was really intrigued about that, and this is how it started.
Okay, and I think it's interesting too that you not only research and study it, but or you know, study people, but you also practice these things on yourself. I think it's a very strong, you know, case for all the things you're doing and what you're talking about. You know, they say the proof is in the pudding, you know, like performance is something that you've been able to achieve also, but by using the knowledge that you've gained, right?
Yeah, especially I think some people say they are self-coached, but they don't really coach themselves. They just do whatever they want. And for me, I am self-coached, but I really plan my training and I really look at it and I really try to think of new ways to improve. And I also think I really try to base my philosophy, my coaching philosophy on the science directly. So I don't, so far, I haven't read like the books from Jason Koop and all the people who write about ultra training, because I think if I start to do the same thing as everybody, well, we're not going to be faster than them. So I think you have to really go like in the science and to have an idea of what you think is the best way to improve yourself based on that. It may not be the way everybody do it, but I think it's still interesting to test stuff on yourself. And then when you think it can work, you start to test on the athlete you coach. And this is when it starts to be interesting, when you have feedback on like, oh, just try this session and tell me how does it feel? Like, does it feel the same for you than for me? Because sometimes you do stuff that on paper, it looks really hard. Then you think, oh, it's quite easy, actually. And then you have the feedback from the athlete. It's like, oh, how did you feel during that threshold after doing some high intensity intervals? And it's kind of funny to compare the feelings of the session also as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's going to be different for everybody, you know, and I think that's a constant, it's going to be constant like feedback that you're going to be receiving from not only yourself, but from the people that you're coaching or the data you're collecting too. That's awesome. I see, like, I'm just looking at your, you know, I mean, you're a good athlete, you know, great athlete. I could say that, you know, your Hamilton Marathon in 2014 to 2:32:45. I mean, it's pretty impressive time, you know, at the marathon distance. Is that something, like, where do you want to go as an athlete? Do you have a curiosity to see, you know, are you still doing this for the love of it? I mean, you're not a professional athlete, you have a job and all that stuff, but clearly there's some potential there. Are you curious about that?
Yeah, actually I am a lot, especially like, as I said, I think the race a few days ago was maybe one of the best of my life. And I learned, I think 2 years ago, I learned I have celiac disease, so I can't eat gluten. But actually, so I feel like there's a lot of result in the past year that was affected by that, because you don't know that you have an intolerance to gluten. So I really started to think, because I feel like when I was in Switzerland for my master, I really trained a lot thinking I will see how fast I can go against the best. But I didn't have really good results. So you think, oh, I'm not made for that, so I will do something else. But then now I feel like I'm at least as fit as I was in 2014 when I had my best results. So I'm thinking like maybe now that because I work full time, so I don't train as much as I would love to. So I'm still thinking like maybe I would love to do that like another season just to see like how, if I really train, not full time, but if I really put everything into training, how fast I can go, that would be fun. But I don't know if I will have the opportunity to do that, but that would be great. Especially like even on the marathon, I think 2:30 is not like completely, I think I would love to run it. Maybe I would try next year, but we'll see.
Yeah, because even your half marathon time this year in Montreal, you know, 2:12, and it's a good indicator for, you know, the possibilities. You know, the speed is there, so that's
Yeah, awesome. And I think I'm still better with longer stuff. I think I have like a super high step frequency. Like basically on the half marathon, I run like 200 steps per minute.
Oh wow!
And I really feel like this is really more helpful on the ultra stuff. Like you do really small steps, so you have less muscle strain, so you can maintain a higher pace for a longer time. So I really feel like my best distance is probably more like above 50K, like even on the road. Maybe one day do 100K on the road just to see, but it sounds like terribly painful, but still, it might be the good distance for me. But it's easy to say that I've never done it.
Yeah. Have you found like maybe, have you settled into like a sweet spot now and at like a 50K, 55K distance? Or do you still have interest in doing those really long stuff? But I guess it's more demanding. You're talking about finding the time to train. I guess it's more demanding to train for a, you know, 100 mile or 100K race than it would be for a 55 then.
Yeah, but the more and more, I think my coaching philosophy is not so much about volume, but also how do you do the interval session. So like right now, what I'm doing a lot is I do like some high intensity interval training, like a really good session. And then when you think like, oh, that's a good session, I still do like 30 or 40 minutes of threshold right after. And oh, wow. I really feel like this is maybe the best. It's a great way, I think, to train for an ultra. And when I do this session, most of the time it's on the treadmill at work, and I will commute in the morning and in the evening. So then I have one day with like 35K of running with like some crazy big interval. And I really feel like this session, this day alone is really, really, really beneficial. And I really feel like I don't need that much like long runs. Like just this summer between my ultra in like early July and the one I did this weekend, I think I only had one very long run. I think it was 40K. So I'm not saying it. I wouldn't be better doing more, but I don't think you absolutely need to do it. You just have to find ways to get the same benefits. And for me, that's some crazy big day with intervals and also some downhill intervals. Basically, I go run in Orford. Maybe I go down the mountain 3 times, almost all out. And like your legs are smashed after that. Like it's way, way more stressful than a long run. And I think this will also lead to better adaptation than just going forever in the trails.
Yeah, and then what are you talking about in terms of like hours per week in terms of training? Is it like 10 hours per week? Is it like 8 hours or?
Yeah, actually I looked recently and I think it was like 10 hours per week of running, but 7 hours of week of cycling.
Right.
So that's an average for maybe I think 10 weeks. But the cycling is basically because I always, at least this year, I always go, always take my bike to go train. So if I go in Orford, I will have 135K ride to go there and to go back. Mm-hmm. So my basically cycling volume is basically maybe every other week I have a lot of cycling. But so the overall volume, it's rarely above 20 hours. But I would love actually to see like, what can I do if I go 20 hours, like, every week almost, but you can do that. Like in Quebec running, you can do that. Like when I was in Switzerland, you can do 20 hours of trail running because there's so much hiking involved that I feel like it's possible. But I know for me, I would break down if I just run for 20 hours every week, but that would be like over 200K, right? So that's a lot. But with cycling mixed in there and maybe more elevation gain, I think that would be better. But as I said, I think there's always way around the fact that you don't do, like for me, I feel like I don't do enough elevation gain. But as I said, if you do strength training, if you do some downhill intervals, you can make it up for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's interesting because it's like, there's not one way to do it. You know, there's always like the suggested method, but I think you're proving that, you know, you're doing what works for you. And I think, you know, the cycling cross training is also really great. Like I can say that I know that when I did, you know, Ironman training, I don't think I ever felt fitter than when I was doing that. You know, when I was swimming, biking and running like good amounts every single week. And I think this is also proof of that, but like you're commuting with your bike quite a distance so you can go running, you know, on the weekend. And I read in your inner bio that you like to take your tent too. So you're really like really resourceful when it comes to like getting your training. You know, there's always a way. I find it's like, when you talk to athletes and people not finding the time, you know, like that's a good way to get in the training, you know, by commuting, you know, by going on an adventure as well. And that way you keep fun too, right?
Yeah. And I think it's, as I said, I do it mostly like 1 week out of two because I don't have time to do it every weekend because it basically takes a whole weekend to do a long run. But still, I think it's my way to do it. But I guess everybody can have some benefits.
What would you say, what's the biggest like lesson that, that running has taught you?
That's a good question. I think, well, I think it's maybe, and this took years maybe for me, but I think it's to really trust to trust yourself, but I would say in a different way than I thought before. I think in the past when I was thinking like, oh, you can trust yourself, it's basically you trust your abilities. But now I think it's more to trust the plan that you have and to be able, as a, I'm really competitive, so to be able to let people go and to, because you trust that you can catch them back later. Because I think I have a reputation in trail running, I think at least in the past years, to be the one that go out really fast and blew up. And I think now I'm at a point where I'm confident enough in not only like myself, but mostly on the plan I have, and that I can be smarter than the other, that I can let them go and that I might still catch them up. So I think it's maybe the one lesson to trust yourself more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's a very good lesson for sure. Like to stick to your plan, your strategy and your ability, and that, that it all works out in the end, you know, and that.
Yeah, and maybe it comes from not trusting the others, like to think they don't know what they're doing, but that's.
Yeah, yeah, that's a it's risky, right? But you know, it's part of the game. It's fun, right?
Yeah, but when you ask around, I think that's what I did in Bromo last year. I think we were 6 or 7 in the lead pack, and you ask around like, how do you pace yourself, guys? And basically, everybody was following the others. So we were like 6 people running fast and we were just following each other, basically. Like mm-hmm. Nobody had a real plan. That's when I started to think, maybe actually we should have a better plan than just following people, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's a game of chicken at that point.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
It's racing to win instead of racing, like by doing that, and you hear that in marathons too, like people, like in the elites, right? They want to follow the main pack if they want to try to win the thing, you know, because they know that by sticking in there as long as they can, maybe there's a chance to outlast or to have the better kick or whatever it may be. But I think you're taking a wise approach when like no one sounds like they know what they're doing. It's just like, hang on for dear life kind of thing. It's better to be in control of your own destiny, you know?
Exactly.
So that's cool. Yeah. It's a cool outlook on that for sure. And what would you say, maybe endurance sports means to you?
I think it's because I think earlier we talked about like just trail running and the idea of like discovery and stuff, but I think it's basically self-discovery, just to know yourself better, because you spend, especially like even in training, like you spend a lot of time with yourself. Like I don't listen to music when I train. So you spend time with your thoughts, you spend time, especially when you go like with bikepacking and everything, like you're a lot of time with yourself alone. It may sound lonely, but it's also, I think, a good way to know like how you react to situation. Like, let's say you're bunking on the bike, like, what will you do about it? Like if you're getting cold because it's rainy and you're feeling wet for like hours, like I think it's a really good way to know yourself, to know your limits. And I think that's what I love about it.
Yeah. And I agree with that. You know, you have to put yourself in challenging situations to see how you'll get out of it. You know, like my coaches used to tell me, you know, for Ironman, you know, for most people it's, you know, over a 10-hour event, you know, and, it's a long day, you know, it's a work day for most people out there. And they used to make me go and, you know, go by yourself in Tremblant and ride the course, the whole course, on the hottest day of the summer, or, you know, go out in this rainstorm and go out and bike for 4 hours in pouring rain and kind of see how you do, you know, like it's a mental strength too that you gain, not only physical, but a mental strength that you can gain, especially in endurance sports and in longer distances. You know, I think there's something to be said about that too, right? So that's
really, I think, cool. That's one of the great things about cycling, even for ultra running, because you can do so much more distance on the bike than you can run. And And I think that this is when you learn a lot. Even like, what happens if you eat a poutine on the ride? Well, I guess, right? But I think this is the kind of stuff that's really useful for trail running after. You know the pizza's not really good at the aid station, but you know what's going to happen if you eat it. So I think it's really an opportunity sometimes to learn about yourself when you do long adventure. Like however long is for you. Like for some people, going for 3 hours is like super long, and that's fine. You will learn about yourself if you try to go like beyond the comfort zone.
Yeah, I might ask you to elaborate on that too. You know, like I ask the question a lot. You know, what's the best advice you could give to somebody who's looking to increase their distance or get into running? You know, what would you tell them?
Eat more carbs. I think that's the best advice. Whether it's before, during, or after, I think if you eat more, that's going to help you.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I'm going to try and follow that same advice too. I think that's the part that I was really interested in speaking to you, not only from a performance aspect, but also from a, you know, education aspect. And I don't think I've got to dive into nutrition as much as I have with you today. And I really appreciate you coming on, and especially after a big race. And congratulations on that performance. I really appreciate you coming on today.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah. So yeah, hopefully we see you out there and maybe get a few runs in, or I'll see you at a local race or something. I know you like to tackle those too. But
the wrong series maybe.
Exactly. Hopefully if I'm in town we can do one of those together. So that'd be cool.
But
you know, enjoy your recovery and I'll see you soon.
Thanks a lot.
Take care, dude.
Bye.
Bye. I've been running for a while now, 12 years in fact. It's funny to look back on how I got started and how different things are for me now. I made a lot of mistakes, simply because I didn't know any better. I ran hard every time I went out. I ran longer and fewer days to increase volume. I wasn't recovering as well as I should have, and I didn't prepare long enough for distances I was taking on. What I wish I did from the start was get a coach to help guide me through and teach me the right way. Sound familiar? Well, I learned a lot from those early mistakes, and now I want to help you. Over the last year, I've gradually entered into the world of coaching, helping athletes of all levels reach their goals. It's virtual, interactive, one-on-one training that will help you focus on running so that you can hit your next target. Just shoot me a message at jpugs84 on Instagram with any questions you may have, and we'll take things from there. I look forward to working with you.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to leave your reviews for us on Apple Podcasts or message us directly on Instagram with your comments, feedback, and suggestions for future guests. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
The Rundown is a WRG production, produced by Leslie Woods and Forrest McKay. All the amazing graphics you see on social media are created by Ryan Bondi, and the show is hosted by me, Justin Pugliese.